Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Robin Christofferson.
Oh, hello. Welcome along to another hour of Tech Talk. It is I, Stephen Scott, back with you here again, along with my trusty friend and comrade who knows all about tech, in fact, a lot more than me. And I have to tell you, that is a lot of stuff this guy knows. Robin Christofferson's here from AbilityNet. Hello, Robin.
Hi, everybody. It's not true, but hi.
It is true. Stop that nonsense. It is true. Right, look, we've got so much to get through this week. We're going to be talking about RNIB's new pen friend. There is a brand new version coming, and by the time you're listening to this, it will be available. And it's going to be great because what's wonderful about it is it's got expandable storage, which means... even though it's a labeler, you'll be able to listen to your talking books or perhaps music on the go, all by using this single device. And Robin, I think for a lot of people who maybe want to not use smart technology, I know we are huge fans of smart tech and all of that, and we'll get to that in the emails, some of the comments coming back on that. But, you know, for people who don't want that, this is a good option, isn't it?
Choice is a good thing.
Exactly, and that's what we've been saying since day one of this program. This is what it's all about, telling you what's out there in terms of choice and, you know, giving you the decision, you know, what do you want? So, yeah, we're going to talk about the pen friend. We're going to be hearing from Jenny Mathers from RNIB, who works in product development there. She is going to be here to tell us about the new features. And we'll also be hearing from Sarah Matthews this hour as well. She's here to tell us all about her experience of the pen friend. Also coming up later, are our social media likes actually creating problems for us? And could getting rid of the like button actually help our experience of social media more? We're going to be getting into that in a special report from our reporter, Pandora Brambury, a little bit later here on the programme. So plenty to talk about. We'll get into the news as well. But with us this week, we have... producer Andy, who's over there somewhere. Hello, Andy.
Good day to you, Stephen.
Good day. Yeah, you weren't sure what time of the day it is. I know that.
Good evening. Whenever you're listening to this, hello.
Well, that's it. Look, we're on podcast, we're on air, so, you know, and we're on all over the place. We are literally all over the place, which is how a lot of people refer to this program, and indeed me. Right, look, we're going to get right into the emails because there is a lot to get through for sure. Time for emails.
Email. We get email. Get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
Still don't get the doorbell. Anyway, right, let's get to our first email. Andy, what have you got?
So this first one is from Sue. She says, hi everyone. I wrote in some time ago praising the VR stream as a really great device for reading books, taking notes, podcasts, internet radio, looking up references, TTS for reading files. I was so pleased to hear someone else on the podcast totally agreeing with me. It is by far the best device for accessing content. And yes, you can transfer books from an RNIB memory stick directly to the stream without connecting it to a computer. Ah.
Yeah.
She's giving a long list of instructions on how to do this. So to do it, dig around in the box that the stream came in to find the USB adapter and make sure that the stream has a good charge. Plug in the adapter into the charging port at the bottom of the stream, then plug in the USB into the other end, turn on your stream, and then go to the Talking Books bookshelf. Press key 1 until you get there. You can now navigate this bookshelf with the 4 and the 6 keys. As you go through the list, you will hear the titles of the books and whether it is on the SD card or on the USB. And now you can go to 1 on USB, use play or stop to start it playing. And now you press the 3 key. You'll be asked if you want to copy the book. You can use the hash key to confirm, and the book will be copied to the Talking Books bookshelf or of the stream. And you can use the same with Calibre books on USB, but they will be automatically put into the other books folder for you. And you can do the same with the USB talking newspaper and any other audio MP3 content on your USB. The stream will automatically choose the appropriate bookshelf for you. Once you've copied the book across, just shut down, remove the USB, and then you're ready to do some more. There's no need to plug into a computer at all. It's very quickly achieved. The TTS feature for the text bookshelf is really powerful. I use it all the time for my recipes when cooking. There's one for you, Stephen.
Right.
I just convert my recipe files to rich text and then put them on the stream card in the text bookshelf. I can easily navigate and find the recipe and setting the reading level to read line by line, and then I can weigh out my ingredients without having to dig deep, going back further forth and, you know, using your hands covered in ingredients to try and mess around with the stream. I use a stylus handy to poke the appropriate button, she says, and so keep my stream nice and clean so it's not so easy. No sticky screens, no frustrations. Hope this helps a bit. As you can tell, I'd never go anywhere without my stream. In fact, I now have got my very own dedicated kitchen one as well as my out-and-about one. The battery life is incredibly good, and you can even buy spare batteries for it for you just when you're out and about, so you can clip and you never have to go without a charge. Best regards, that's from Sue.
Well, thank you, Sue. Some specialist tech love to kick off the programme. And what a way to start, right in there with a big instruction on how to do that. That is brilliant, Robin. I didn't even know you could do that.
That's what we like. Yep, that's what we like. Detail, I mean, record a demo as well of you pressing the buttons with your stylus. That would be good too. Yeah, really good. It's all about choice, and she's loving her Victor Reader stream. So
not alone, though, because, I mean, I know reading through some of the emails this weekend and previous shows as well, the love for the Victor Reader goes on, and you kind of think that in this day and age with smartphones and smart tech, that technology would start to disappear. I actually would go as far to say I think the Victor Reader is probably still one of those products that when you go to the big trade shows like Site Village, of course, that's about to start doing the rounds again, that kind of technology is what's being bought. People like it, and it's not cheap by any stretch of the imagination. You know, it's still an expensive piece of kit, but it's a lot cheaper than a smartphone. It's not a smartphone, really important to say that. That's one thing it isn't, is a phone. But, you know, that might be the positive about it, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's brilliant. I'll just throw in my sticky finger solution. So if I'm in the kitchen and doing washing up or whatever it might be, I like the Echo. You know, no surprises there, shock, horror. But you can play your audiobooks from there, either from Audible, or if you connect a Bluetooth device, any device that has Bluetooth that plays books, then you can have it coming out through the Echo, and then you can use your voice to play and pause and fast forward and that sort of thing. And there's a brilliant skill on there called Recipedia, which will step you through your steps in your recipe or the ingredients, and it will wait until you're good and ready for the next step, or you can repeat steps.
Oh, you
as
can
well.
Do that, can you?
Yeah, I would probably throw that in there as well, just while we're talking about kitchen solutions.
Yeah, I know the Google Home, when it came out, that was one of the things they actually used as an example of how good this could be. And it was something I think at the time the Amazon Echo couldn't do, for whatever reason. But obviously that was a while ago, and these skills have moved on. The other one I would mention is My Media. Have you heard of that one?
Mm-hmm.
That's a really interesting skill. So it's not necessarily for books, but you could use it for that. You could use it for audiobooks, because essentially what it's doing is, you know, I'm a big fan of having my own music locally. Andy always laughs at me when I say, I'm about to rip my CD collection again. And he's like, really? In 2019, you're ripping CDs? But I do. I like the copies of the songs I like in the format, the style, you know.
And the versions.
Exactly.
Often you get the live version, if you ask.
Exactly.
Your smarts, yeah.
And that's the key thing. So you've got the CD that you like, the songs you like, and the style and the version. But the problem is getting it to play on those other devices. Because, you know, the problem, as you say, is as soon as you ask your Echo or your HomePod or your Google Home or whatever to play those songs, it's going to go to a preferred music provider like Amazon Music or Apple Music or whatever it is.
And you have to pay for them sometimes.
Exactly. Whereas I've already bought these songs, I'm not buying them again. So
we grew up in the 90s, Stephen. I mean, we had CDs. So we've still got piles and piles of CDs in our houses, I'm sure.
Well, I certainly do.
Yeah, I do
tons
as well,
of
yeah.
CDs.
You haven't lived unless you've untangled tape.
I must admit, I mean, I used tape a lot. Of course I did, you know, growing up in the 80s, you were always... Yeah, it's funny, I remember seeing a picture years ago. I remember this picture. I say years ago now, but it was only a couple of years ago. But it was a picture of a cassette tape, and a pencil. And it said, there's a certain generation of people who will understand the link between these two. Everyone else will be like, what on earth is a pencil and what is that thing?
Andy's probably wondering that now.
No.
Oh, he's old enough to know.
Oh, I'm old enough to know.
He might pretend he's young. I know he does sound like a baby, doesn't he?
But
he's not. Yeah, big baby.
should we move on before?
Well, just to say on that point about My Media, what's interesting about that skill is you can have local media on your computer hard drive, and then you can share that media, so it could be MP3 files, and obviously that could be audiobooks or whatever, and you could share them to your Amazon Echo device. So it's well worth checking out. I'm going to do it for music, and once I've got it set up, I'll do a little demo for us here.
Another really good one in that score is Plex. Plex,
yes.
You can, as long as you've got a computer that's always on your network, your local network, and it works over the internet too, and then you would either have a Plex player on your phone if you're out and about, or there's a Plex skill for the smart speakers too. So yeah, they are fantastic solutions.
And if you've got some video that you might want to share, maybe you've got home videos or whatever, you want to put them onto Plex, you can do that, and it will even share them to your Apple TV, and all of that's accessible as well. So yeah, so it's a kind of multimedia solution.
I recorded a huge number of shows off the radio over the years, and they're all on my Plex as well. So
no, you didn't. No, you didn't. No, you didn't do that, Robin. I'm trying to save you here.
It's for personal use. That's fine.
Right, let's go to another email, Andy, before Robin ends up throwing us all in jail.
Ken says, hi all. With regards to Alan's email about the Victor Reader Stream difficulties for USB or flash drive book loading, and Stephen's comment on how it would be good if the Victor Reader Stream had a companion book loader, I think that it is likely to be an RNIB or UK government licenses issue rather than a Victor Reader Stream or humanware problem, as here in America, Bard, the RNIB audiobooks and Braille book counterpart, the books can be downloaded straight to the Victor Reader Stream through Wi-Fi, just like they can on the Bard app on your mobile. There's also a Humanware companion program for transferring Bard books to the Victor Reader Stream if you use the long way of connecting via USB and flash drive. So it's there in the US. I think that the Victor Reader Stream is more common here as well, as being as it's Canada-based company. For info, iTunes is part of the Victor Reader Stream player already, or at least it is in the US. By the way, he says, it was on the Victor Reader Stream's special blind and low vision playlist on its internet radio and podcast feature that I found Tech Talk in the first place. So yours was the first and only podcast. I am now subscribed to 34 different other podcasts, including Dot to Dot. Keep up the great work, and thank you from Ken.
Ah, well, Ken, good to have you on board. And yes, we did. I remember when I was kind of getting into all this, maybe 5-6 years ago, we were finding out where to put our podcasts and where we should have everything. And it came up that the Victor Reader Stream had the capability to get podcasts onto it. And I contacted them, and they were so nice. And they were like, yeah, of course we'll put your podcast on. I mean, they've heard the podcast now, and it's still there. So that's a good sign. But yeah, it's great.
It hasn't been kicked off. No, an endorsement.
Not yet, but Dot to Dot's there as well. So, you know, clearly they like us, Rob.
Low standards, yeah. It's a low bar.
Yeah, that entry level's pretty low. Right, okay, well, that's great. And Ken, that's brilliant that you're, enjoying. iTunes is part of the Victor Reader? Have you heard of that, Robin? That's not anything I...
Not sure exactly what he means there.
At least in the US, he says.
Does it? Maybe he means he plugs it into the computer and iTunes recognises it, but then... I don't know how that would work. I mean, I know that the computer would recognise it, obviously, and you could shift stuff across, but not through iTunes, I would have thought.
And on that note about a Humanware companion app already being available in the US that supports Bard, perhaps the case is that the RNIB needs to get in touch with them to incorporate the RNIB Overdrive capability as well. And then I think it would just be available here as well.
Yeah, I mean, all this stuff should be universal. I mean, especially when it comes to blind people. Things are hard enough, you know, and it's like you've got to ground the houses with all this nonsense.
It's like audio description. It's only available
Don't even go there. Spending time at the weekend, right, trying to find something to watch. My wife says to me, look, let's watch a film. I said, okay, let's watch a film then. So we spent, I think, about... And you play this game, right, where you've got to go through the movies. Now, Andy, right, I always bring you in here as the sighted guy in this, right? You're the fall guy every time.
Yeah.
But, you know, you want to watch a movie, you think, oh, you know, I'll look at the description, I'll see what I think about the movie. I think, oh, that sounds quite good, I'll watch that.
Yeah.
Well, I do that, but then I've got to say, right, has it got AD? No. Oh, well, that's that with the picture. Yeah. Right, what's next? Has that got AD? No. And even if the description is like the movie I would love to watch.
Yeah.
Doesn't have AD, can't watch it. Which is just rubbish.
Yep.
Yeah. I've said it. I feel better now. Right, what else is in the email inbox?
Email from Tobias. He says, hello from Sweden.
Ah, hello Sweden. And Tobias.
I listened to today's episode, he means last week's episode, and I got 2 to 3 points. First, I'm kind of curious about Yngwie and his YouTube channel from last week, the one who wrote to you about the dictaphone.
Oh, yeah.
Did you get his YouTube check? I don't think we did in the email.
Don't think we did, no.
So, Yngwie, if you listen, please email again, and we'll plug your YouTube channel on next week's episode.
I think it was in... It wasn't in English, from my understanding. I think it was Norwegian, wasn't it? So that might be a... Well, that might be okay for
Sweden.
Yeah, that might be all right.
There's a slight difference
for Tobias, but not for. Might be more complicated for us. But yeah, you never know. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
I am working with a product that would be great to get your insight on. We don't market it to blind and visually impaired, nonetheless, but hopefully it's a good fit. It's a smartwatch connected to your phone, but without a screen. Instead, it communicates in Morse code through vibrations that can be adapted to the user, depending on the person and how long the person has used it. For example, in the beginning, only getting the first letter of a person calling for a few specific people is beneficial enough. Moving on to the name of the person, and then the first word in the text, all to the information received through notifications. The website is xtactor.com, and you can find it on Instagram as well by searching xtactor, which is xtactor. Lastly, great podcast that gives me, as a seeing person, a better insight into what it means to be visually impaired or blind. Keep up the great work from Tobias.
Well, thank you, Tobias. I mean, that's a really interesting one, Robin. I mean, a smartwatch without a screen that communicates via Morse code. Yeah, I kind of like that idea. I think that could work.
I hope it does the time by Morse code as well, because I think there's a huge market for people who want more tactile options. Now, I just hope it's not going to get Sherlocked, as they call it, by a particular app on the smartwatch, for example, on an Apple Watch, because, you know, it's kind of ripe for, you know, because that's an app platform, then somebody could sort of recreate that functionality. And that, you know, choice, I suppose, is a good thing. But yeah, particularly for deafblind people, having an option which is haptics-based is incredibly useful. So yeah, it sounds really cool. Morse code should live on, just like Braille. You know, these things shouldn't go by the wayside, definitely not.
Well, I love the idea, and I think that it's going to be an interesting one for sure. It's always a challenge, though, with this kind of technology, isn't it? Because, of course, it isn't marketed to us as blind people. That's the key thing. Which is a good thing. I like that. I always love technology that isn't marketed to us. It's marketed to everybody. That's kind of the point of this whole program. But I just, I don't know. It seems like an awful lot to learn. It's like something else, isn't it? I've learned Braille, or learning Braille, because it never really stops, I find.
yeah.
And, you know, I've figured out JAWS and, you know, learned VoiceOver this year on the Mac, and my head's kind of bursting with all that. Now I need to learn Morse code. The handy thing is, if ever I get lost at sea, I'll be fine if I learn that as well. So there's always a chat, you know, it's always an upside.
I'm on the website just now. It's shaped kind of like a Fitbit. I don't know if you remember, what a Fitbit's okay. like.
Long and thin.
Long and thin. Yeah, you're not, obviously not getting the big bulky front, the face of a watch on top of it. So it says, connect your phone to your brain via your sense of touch. It sounds almost ominous. It sounds like Black Mirror-esque, doesn't it?
To your brain.
I like the sound of it.
Oh, I tell you.
Often have I thought, could I connect my phone to my brain?
Do you need to have a brain in order for it to function? Because that might be my problem.
Moving on.
Yeah, thanks for the support there, guys. Right. Okay, what else? Thank you, Tobias, for that. That's very interesting.
Yes,
I think a lot of people will be very keen to read about that. Okay. Have you got a website there, did you say?
Yeah, if everybody wants a website, it's xtactor.com. xtactor.com.
Okay.
Well. And yeah, it's in English. It may have come across English to me automatically, but there's a video there that people can play as well to find out more information. Yeah, xtactor.
Okay. What else?
So this next email from Greg, he says, hello, I think you may have missed an important part in Alan's email on the Victor Reader stream and Trek. Here in the US, if connected to Wi-Fi, I can search the NLS book catalogue and download books directly on my Victor Reader. It is quick and easy. I can do the same for Bookshare books, and newspapers from the NFB Newsline are automatically delivered to my Victor Reader. In most countries around the world, books are easily accessed directly on a Victor Reader or other brand book player via Daisy online. Alan is so right to ask, why not in the UK? Mm-hmm. For me, it is much easier and far more enjoyable to use the Victor Reader for books and podcasts. Even more important, Daisy Books from the vast collection of the Internet Archive cannot be read on an iPhone, but only authorised, specialised readers like the Victor Reader. Regarding Robin's comments on the Trek's GPS and the iPhone, I use both, and the Trek is usually better, easier, and I've bookmarked many doorways and off-map locations such as park benches, campus locations, and the park gazebo. So many off-street locations that the iPhone apps just can't do. The best thing the iPhone has over the Trek and the ability to dictate in destinations in a hurry, as they use commercial TomTom maps, map updates have not been the problem that Robin suggests. I use another specialised device I've had for many years that I cannot live without. It's an old ID Mate barcode scanner. I put a barcode on anything that does not already have one. It's invaluable. Trying to USA smartphone's camera to access barcodes is an exercise in frustration. That's from Greg in Pennsylvania.
Well, thank you, Greg. I must say, I think that you're making me realise, I think, why the Victor Reader is so popular, especially in America, obviously. I mean, the ability to get your newspapers delivered there, you know, you can go and search through the device for books. That is brilliant. That's something that we don't have here, that I'm aware of anyway.
Yeah.
I think that's where these devices come into their own, isn't it? When they are functional like that, and clearly it's got all that capability, which when you think about it, you know, you're kind of looking at a device. It's quite small. It's maybe a bit thicker than your standard smartphone, but it's about the same size, and it's got that 1-to-9 keypad on it, and yet it can do all that stuff. That's brilliant.
Certainly, it has come on with each new version, and I'm really pleased to hear more love for it there. And yeah, let's bring that Wi-Fi syncing to the UK, please.
Yeah,
I think
when
you were saying that there's no way of playing Daisy Books on an iPhone, I mean, obviously there is the Easy Reader.
Yes.
App from Dolphin, and the books that you're getting through the RNIB Overdrive service are.
And Voice Stream Reader as well. Let's not forget Voice Stream Reader.
I don't know how true that is, that there aren't other options out there, but the simplicity of the Victor Reader Stream, absolutely.
Mm.
And on that Trekker question, I mean, there are obviously ways of setting waypoints or breadcrumbs, you know, landmarks at particular locations that don't have a point of interest already in apps like Blind Square, Lazarillo, and others like that. But certainly they're all subject to the vagaries of GPS. So they can be within a few meters of, you know, when you set them, or, you know, tens of meters away, depending on how many satellites you can see at any one time, etc. So if the Trekker does it more accurately, and more consistently, fantastic. That's really good. I'm all too aware that GPS solutions, in my experience, are, you know, subject to quite a lot of inaccuracy. We're certainly not at the point yet where you can go and, you know, find a door handle because you set a breadcrumb at that particular point in the past. So, yeah.
It's what I call the last 10 yards problem, and I know that's a common phrase used.
That's what you need to do. Secrete them secretly without people knowing on the back of door handles or on the door frame or something.
Well,
and then you'll be able to win.
The thing that actually a lot of us here in the UK were quite excited about was the Galileo project.
I know.
Which was the satellite that would give us a lot more accuracy. And then Brexit kind of screwed that, didn't it? So, so far, anyway. I mean, it hasn't happened yet. I'm talking about Brexit. But you never know.
Yeah.
Anyway, look, I don't want to delve into that on this programme. But what I do want to say is let's talk about something completely different. And we'll come back to your emails. If you want to join the conversation, then do get in touch with us, because there's lots of chat around the Victor Reader this week. Share your love for it as well, if you wish. Or tell us what you don't like. Or tell us about things we don't know. Because I'll be honest with you, I've got the Victor Reader, I think it's the second generation, it's not the Wi-Fi one. I am looking for a reason to upgrade, and Site Village is coming. I may purchase a new Victor Reader because I like it. I like tactile buttons. That's one thing I do miss. I find my iPhone XS at the minute is driving me insane with Face ID, because I tend to listen to my phone. Obviously, I listen to it, but what I mean is I tend to have it up to my ear. And the problem is that Face ID doesn't work on ears. It works on faces.
Just draw eyes and a mouth on your ear.
Yeah, just put a picture of myself on my ear. Job done. Yeah. Right, look, Andy's going to stay with us. We're going to go back to the emails a bit later, but I want to turn to the RNIB Pen Friend, which is launching a new edition of it, and with more details of some of the features. Here is Jenny Mathers from RNIB.
The Pen Friend, it's an audio labeler. It allows you to record personalised messages to label up anything that you wish to. That could be in your home, to label up your CD collection, perhaps your health and beauty products. It could be to label items in your kitchen cupboard. But some people may also find it useful for work as a note taker, or perhaps in an educational setting as well, to label up tactile diagrams with some audio content as well. It's about 15 centimetres long and about 2 centimetres wide at the top, and then tapers down to 1 centimetre at its tip. So sort of like a big chunky pen. You can record your own personalised message. So you use your own voice to record onto different types of labels. So there are sticky labels, magnetic labels, and special laundry labels, which will go through the wash up to 50 times. And each label has specific code on it. So your recording is allocated to that label and stored on the pen. With the 2019 version, it's very much still a labeler. That is its core functionality. However, you can also listen to MP3 music files on it now. And you can also listen to a talking book on it. So your current read. Perhaps you're on your way to the shops to do the grocery shopping and you've got your Pen Friend with you, ready to label stuff up as it goes into the basket, but you could listen to your current reading book on the bus or on the train as you go on that journey. We'll be at Site Village on the 9th and 10th of July in Solihull, so please do pop along and see us there. Our Products for Life stores will also have a demonstration model each on display, and they're in Belfast, Edinburgh and London, and the product information is also available on our online shop.
So there you go, that's Jenny Mathers talking there from RNIB. How much do you know about the RNIB Pen Friend, Robin? Have you tried it yourself?
I've had a go a long time ago, certainly not with this one. Really useful to be able to record specific bespoke messages, because with the extra capacity now especially, you can record really quite long ones that give you instructions, like a little instruction manual for things that you haven't used very often or you find complicated. So yeah, really good. Does it have a headphone jack?
Yes, it does.
Okay, good. Because that's what you want if you're listening to audiobooks on the bus.
Yeah. I mean, I must admit, these days it seems like everyone just listens to everything through the speaker of their phone, don't they? But I don't think, you know, it's one thing listening to rap music. I don't think they want to hear, you know, something from, I don't know, Charles Dickens.
Barbara Cartland, I know.
Yeah. You see, we went very different ways there on that one, Robin. You know, totally different ways. Well, let's talk, or hear, I should say, from Sarah Matthews, who actually uses the Pen Friend. She has the previous edition at the moment, and she's been telling us about her experiences of it and why she likes it.
I find it useful for a variety of different things that happen in my daily life as a blind person. I lost my sight about 6 years ago, and it was very sudden, so I really had to adjust very quickly, and a Pen Friend was the first piece of technology that helped me to do that. At the time, when I first came out of hospital, I didn't think I would ever be able to use my phone again or my computer. It all just seemed so hard. But I had really a good help from my sight impairment team. They came along and showed me different ways you can do things, and one of those things was the Pen Friend. And I had an OT that helped me to put dots on all of my herbs and spices in my kitchen, so I could locate anything I wanted to when I started cooking again. And I also used it to help me to read to my son. It's something that I was really wanting to, you know, carry on doing, but I didn't think it was going to be possible. So at the time, he was a toddler, and I wanted to read all his picture books to him. So what I was able to do with the Pen Friend was to ask family members to put a dot on each page and then use the pen friend to record the words with maybe sort of like a pause between each sentence. And then I would attach the pen friend to my headphones and listen to it through that. And then in every pause, I would repeat the words I was hearing to my son. So it felt like I was reading to him at bedtime every night. Lovely. That was a tip that I actually, a tip that I got from Blind Mums Connect, who have been really helpful coming up with different ideas to make life easier.
Sarah Matthews telling us there about her experience of the pen friend. And Robin, you know, what stands out for me there is the fact, two things actually. One, that Sarah came to this device after thinking that she wouldn't be able to use any devices after she lost her sight. Obviously, she's learned since that she can use that kind of technology, but she's also enjoying the fact that she's capable of using this other kind of tech as well, the specialist tech, which is obviously very purposeful. And what a beautiful story of how she reads to her child.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly how I know the pen friend, because my sister, who can't see as well, that's how she reads to her son. He's small enough that there isn't any, there's just one line of text on each page. And she has that just read out loud through the pen friend. But then she knows the books well enough to know what the accompanying pictures are. And then they have a good chat about the pictures on that particular page, that she now knows what it is because the text was read out of that particular short line of text about, you know, that continues the story. So yeah, really, really good.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing about it, isn't it? That's how this technology becomes really personal to you. And you can understand why people become loyal to that kind of technology, because it's there for you. And with now the expandable memory that is built inside this device, it's going to mean you can record more notes. I guess you can also take those notes. I mean, maybe not so much take them with you, but, you know, you can maybe record notes on it and then have them available. You can put them onto your computer or whatever else, and take MP3s and books or whatever else you want, really, with you on the go. Price of this device, by the way, £80. You can go and try it out at Sight Village Birmingham on the 9th and 10th of July. That is the big Sight Village event taking place in Birmingham. You can also check out on the what they call the life stores, if you like, from RNIB. There are various shops, as you were hearing there from Jenny Mathers earlier. There are a couple of different shops. So, yeah, lots of opportunities to try it out. And, of course, you can get it from the RNIB shop as well. That is available, shop.rnib.org.uk. Very interesting product. And if you've got the pen friend and you want to share your thoughts on it, then do get in touch. Right, time for the news.
News from the internet.
I'm going to start off with a story about Facebook and Twitter, Instagram, likes. Do you like being liked, Robin?
We all do, don't we?
Well, yeah, I mean, I kind of go with the I'm not overly fussed about likes, if I'm honest. I mean, very rarely do I get many likes on what I do. And if they are, if I do get likes on it, that's great, but I'm not overly fussed about it. But for a lot of people, it is a bit of a big deal, and I can get that to some degree. Well, we are going to be finding out about the possibility of taking away likes on one particular social network. Pandora Brambury has this report.
Gaining social approval can be addictive and easily obtained on social media platforms, such as Facebook and Instagram, providing likes which distill social approval into its purest form. In the past, smartphones have been likened to slot machines by researchers, as they trigger the same reward pathways in our brain. Just like slot machines, smartphones are addictive by design, aiming to maximise device usage. They want to keep people in front of their screens admiring the pretty lights and receiving those dopamine hits. The like button is now ambiguous across multiple platforms, such as Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. The benefit is obvious. A single click is the simplest way for users to engage, much easier than typing out a comment. In February 2009, the like button was launched on Facebook. The revolution was almost instantaneous. 50 comments became 150 likes, triggering people to make more status updates, thereby creating more content, which in turn generated more likes. In the summer of 2019, Instagram plans to remove the total number of likes from photos and videos that are on the main feed, profiles, and permalink pages. only the account user will be able to see the number of likes a post receives. The new design will show a couple of profile pictures next to a call out of a few names of people who have liked the photo, as it already does, but will no longer show the exact count of people who have liked the post. Instagram has said the reason for this update is so users are able to concentrate on their posts and interacting with the app rather than the likes. Many users will actually delete photos which they consider to have not got enough likes. Many studies have been conducted exploring the culture surrounding social media and the unhealthy obsession with likes and comparison with others online. It is hoped that by getting rid of the liking part of these social media apps, there will be a reduction in some of the negative effects about getting enough likes on a post, and eliminate the competition to have the most likable post or photo. It is hoped that this will actually increase authenticity across posting and could benefit many, and encourage others to engage with the apps in a healthier way.
Pandora Bambury there. Very interesting subject, this, because this is the big problem, I think, Robin, for a lot of young people growing up, is that they are kind of tied now to these social networks, and this constant need for likes and for approval. And it is very psychological, obviously. There's lots of work being done by these social media companies to find the best ways to give us those dopamine hits, as they say. And that's quite challenging. It's something as a person of a certain age, and I say that, you know, I'm 37. I'm not exactly old by any stretch. At least I feel it, but I'm not. But, you know, I didn't grow up with all of this. This happened quite late in my life in terms of my development. So I was out of that phase. I was out of all of that. I wasn't in school. I wasn't in college. I was in a working world when all this came around. So the need for likes and for all this approval didn't really hit me. And I have to be honest, it still doesn't really hit me. If I get a like on a picture, yeah, that's nice. I don't really go in to look for it. Other people tend to tell me about it rather than me noticing it myself. Where are you on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a lot of pressure around how you present your life on social media, and the likes drive that pressure, I'm sure, to a great extent, because you need to put the, you know, best possible shine or the quirkiest angle or follow the most current meme or whatever it is to try and have the, you know, the likes flood in. And particularly if you're low vision or even blind, I think we had an item about a blind person who does take selfies and, you know, is a makeup artist and that sort of thing, and has that confidence to deliver that through social media, even though she's got no vision. But if it's all about how great that picture is or how quirky it is or, you know, whatever, that's going to make people who haven't got vision to be confident about the picture that they're taking even more disenfranchised in this increasingly visual medium. You know, you can just post tweets on Twitter that don't include a photo, but many do. And certainly on Instagram, it's all about the photo, and Snapchat, etc. So to reduce this pressure of the likes by only making it visible to the user themselves, I think that will hopefully make people with low or no vision feel more comfortable about putting themselves out there with the photos that they are taking, not necessarily of themselves, but, you know, whatever they do, those youngins, without, you know, being concerned that they just don't cut the, you know, mustard when it comes to visual, this really visual medium.
Yeah, it's a really interesting perspective you've got on that there. I often had the view that as blind people, we wouldn't have the same or the kind of hit, the dopamine hit, if you like, that you get from seeing, you know, you've had 50 likes on a picture, which I've never had in my life. But if I did, apparently that dopamine levels would go through the roof. I often thought that you wouldn't get that if you were blind, because you wouldn't see that. You know, I know there's a lot of work that goes into, and I remember watching a documentary about this, the work that goes into the right colour, so that when the little icon pops up that says one or two or three, say on your messages or on your Twitter feed or on your whatever, that colour is really important because it strikes you and it makes you want to, you know, and if you see that, even the icon before the number, you're like, oh, I've got a like, or someone likes this or whatever. And I often thought that wouldn't apply to blind people. This just wouldn't apply. However, since using VoiceOver for a number of years and sort of tentatively getting back into the world of social media with it, I've been a bit slower than I would like to have been, to be honest. But, you know, I've got a life to lead, so I don't tend to. See, I'm one of these people, I have a real life, not a social media life. So I don't tend to live my world on social media. I do like Twitter. I like it for news. I like it for keeping up to date with what's happening in the tech world. A lot of blind people I know on Twitter. I use Facebook maybe for groups more than anything else, you know, to find out what's going on in the visually impaired community. That's what I tend to use it for. But I don't tend to engage as much as I perhaps should. But when I have engaged more recently, I've noticed that when you hover over, say, a post or you go to a post or you, something you've done, it will tell you how many likes. It tells you, oh, 10 likes. And I actually have found that start to make me go, oh.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. So, you know, you're still getting that information, be it audibly, and it still, I guess, is having the same impact.
Yeah, definitely. How I get the most likes of things that I put out on Twitter. I don't do any other social. Well, I've got a Facebook account, but it's gathering dust in the corner. But on Twitter, I tend to quote tweets. So the tip is follow amazing people. Then when they post amazing things, which may or may not include a photo, quote them rather than retweeting and put in some small comment of your own. Doesn't take much effort to say just how amazing this post is or whatever, you know, whatever you want to add to the comment. Those I find are the ones that get the most likes of all my tweets. So it's kind of riding on the back of people that have put in a lot of effort into putting together a brilliant tweet. So just quote those, which is the way that you can add in a little comment of your own, and it will include the original tweet in there and the original image or whatever it might be.
Wow.
So yeah, top tip there.
Lazy anxiety. How does that work? That's a bit of a paradox, is it not? I don't do that. And I must ask you this, Robin, just while we're here. How many times have you quoted me?
Too numerous to recall.
Right, okay. Listen, I want to quickly mention,
you are among the amazing people that I follow.
Oh, you're very kind. You got out of that one. You reversed out of that cul-de-sac beautifully. Now, I want to talk quickly about an app that is doing the rounds at the minute. Now, this is not this is one of these not for blind people, but useful for under that category. If you've got Sonos at home, do you have Sonos, Robin?
I don't.
You need to think about that there for a second.
Yes, no, I don't.
Right, okay. Well, I do, because I love good audio. And I must say, Sonos it delivers really good audio. I wouldn't really consider it a major problem, but you can't control Sonos easily from your Apple Watch. This is definitely a first world problem for sure. But one of the challenges I had was, right, okay, could I control the whole thing, the whole system, via the watch? Well, you can now, and the reason I bring this up is because the app has been tested by a number of blind people who say it's fully accessible. Jonathan Mosen, who's a regular here on the programme and a friend of the show, and also someone who regularly talks about technology. He is in New Zealand, and he's well known in the blind community for his work on accessibility, producing lots of great books on the subjects and all of that. He has tweeted out saying this app is fully accessible, which gave me the confidence to download it and try it. It is really good. Basically, it's very simple. And being on the Apple Watch, and I think there's a conversation here, Robin, we should probably have around wearable technology and how actually that technology is possibly the most accessible way for us to navigate our phones and our technology, mm-hmm. especially as the Apple Watch becomes even more detached from the iPhone, as I think the new version is going to be, and more networks, like we mentioned O2 last week, are making it so that you can have the Apple Watch as a separate entity to your phone. You still have to have an Apple iPhone for it to work. So you would have an Apple iPhone contract and then an Apple Watch contract. But if you leave your phone at home, you can still use your Apple Watch. And I think as they become more independent, I think that is going to change things. And for us, it could make things a lot more accessible. The Sonos app is exactly that. It lets you not only control, play, pause, go to the next track, previous track. It lets you find playlists, find songs, play them. Really, really nice little app, and all on the Apple Watch and fully accessible. It's called LYD, L-Y-D.
And just for people who aren't sure what Sonos's are, they are quite expensive, but very, very good quality speakers, smart speakers, that can play streaming audio, a bit like the Echo, but you know, these are for hi-fi buffs, people like Stephen and Jonathan who really like top quality audio, unlike me. I don't care. But yeah,
you listen through
there are cheaper versions now, aren't there? But yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, Sonos, you can get entry level now. The Sonos Play 1 is going for like £150. That's not bad. You know, that's getting it. And that's a good speaker. That's a really good speaker.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, they go up to like £500 and then you can buy surround sound systems and all of that. But you don't need to buy all that. If you're living in a flat, you know, a Sonos Play 1 or the, what is it called? The Sonos One, which is the new one. I think it's like £200, but it goes on sale at like £180 every so often. And that's the one that's got Lady A built in. Although, point to note, if you've decided as a result of what I'm saying to just go out there and buy a Sonos One, I'm going to tell you one thing about it. I was on the bus. Yes, on our bus, heading to a big department store to buy a Sonos One. And I was listening to a podcast about it because I was all excited. I was off out. I had my money and I was off out and my big day out to buy a Sonos One. And someone on the podcast said, now, of course, one of the things about the Sonos One is it doesn't have drop-in or the calling features. I got off the bus and got on the other side of the road and went home. I thought, no way am I doing that. I'm not buying it if it hasn't got that feature. That's a bit of a strange one. But yeah, some of these devices don't, the non-Amazon tech, if you like, the non-Amazon music speakers don't tend to have those features in them. So be aware of that.
And the newer gen of Echoes, the small and the big ones, do have much better audio than they used to.
Yeah.
One feature we may be able to fit in next week is making a stereo pair of Echoes, which
that would
is
be good, yeah.
What the Sonoses were very well known for and could only the Sonoses could do until recently, so that you could really fill your room. So yeah, you could do that with just two Echo Dots now and get a really, really good effect.
Right, let's get back to the emails. Shall we do it again? Let's do the emails again.
We get email. We get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
Still with that doorbell.
It's what I call getting your money's worth. Right, Andy, we've got more emails.
Email from Alex. It says, hi there to you all at Tech Talk. I'm a musician who uses Logic Pro on my MacBook Pro 2015 edition with the function keys as opposed to the touch bar. I am using the most up-to-date version of iOS and all has been going just great, even though it's been a steep learning curve for me coming from Windows with Jaws and Sonar with the cake-talking script files from Dancing Dots in the US.
Cakewalk.
Cakewalk.
Yeah. I cannot imagine what kind of journey you've been on with that one, Alex. That's so horrendous. Sorry, Andy, carry on.
A new upgrade came out on the 7th of June of this year. As you would think with Apple, they don't release new updates until they are ready to rock and roll. Not this time. I upgraded from 10.44 to 10.45, and guess what? That's right, there's two major bugs in the upgrade, which are that you can't copy and paste loops from the Apple Loops into the track header, which is where you do your recording of your audio and soft synth tracks. I was able to copy and paste the loops into my projects before the upgrade. Also, when you go into the mixer, you have numbers for each of the tracks in your product. In your project, i.e. track 8 could be a hi-hat, whereas before it would tell you that you're on track 8 and it is the hi-hat. Not anymore. VoiceOver gives you a series of numbers, not accessible, and I'm not impressed. I've been informed by my contact at Apple in the States. Oh, that sounds...
yeah.
Your contact at Apple. And he says that it's across-the-board problem and not just for blind or partially sighted people, but for sighted people as well. Interesting one. This problem is being worked on and will be fixed with a new upgrade to Logic Pro X or 10.45 sooner rather than later, if you please, Apple. I do enjoy listening to the programme, even when there might sometimes not be anything that interests me, as I'm sure it will interest others. And it all goes to helping the experience and the learning process. So the moral of this email is, if you're a Logic Pro user and you're using you're thinking of upgrading to 10.45, then don't at the moment.
Don't do it.
As you'll be left high and dry. And if you wish to use these features in Logic, it seems that all the rest of the software is fine and it's working just as it did before the upgrade. Many thanks. All the best from Alex right here in Glasgow.
Thank you very much, Alex. I upgraded my Mac operating system. I've got Mojave on there. And did a system update. It was moaning at me to do the system update. And it completely just destroyed all of my voiceover settings. Just destroyed them. And, you know, it was just horrific. All my voices were all wrong. I actually, at one point, had three voices running at the same time. I didn't think that was possible for the computer. So, you know, for example, it would maybe tell me that with, you know, like if it was a button, it would be one voice would say that, and then another voice would read the text of what the button said, and then another voice would tell me something else. And it was just ridiculous. And it's turned out that whatever has happened, it has defaulted all my voices back to Daniel. I don't like Daniel. Just putting it out there. No offence to you, Daniel, but I don't like your voice. So I prefer Ava. But when you switch it to Ava, you've got to change about 15 other drop-downs as well for all the different parts of the
system. Yeah,
and
they're not easy to find. There's an edit button. You have to interact with that line on the table, which is Daniel or Ava or whatever, and then the edit button there then opens up a massive dialogue with, you know, six or seven other voices in there, with each with their own different settings. And I hate to tell you this, but it happens every single time you update your OS. They all go back to Daniel again.
But what annoyed me was that it had defaulted Daniel, and I had to change every single one. When you choose a voice, you choose a voice, you want it to be that voice, right? So I don't want it to be that voice, with 15 other voices talking at the same time. I just want the one voice.
Yep. No, you have to go in and do it six or seven times every single time.
What
change
a joy.
Back to the one you want. Yeah.
Well, not happy with that. Anyway, just putting it out there, so now you know if it happens every time, which I can look forward to that every single time that system needs an update. Right, Andy, we'll take another email, shall we?
Would you like a long email or a shorter email?
Let's go for a shorter one at the moment, because we've not got a huge amount of time left.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. Yeah, this one's from Martin. Hello, Stephen and Robin. Hope you are well. Was listening to the podcast and Alan was talking about copying books onto his stream. You can connect your thumb drive to the USB stick that you get your book on, which you get on your book, and plug in this into the Victor Reader stream and press the 3 key on the Victor Reader stream, and then press confirm, which is under the number 9 key. This will copy the book straight to the SD card. Much of what we said before, really. I really love the Victor Reader stream, and it would not give it up for anything. I think the Victor Stream Reader is a great book player. Stephen, you can still get the Olympus DM5 voice recorders. I have one, and it speaks everything. Kind regards from Martin. A lot of love for Victor Reader Stream on today's evening.
Yeah, it's nice to hear people talking about it. The Olympus DM5 was a wonderful little recorder. I think you're right. I think I've spotted them on eBay. Some people still selling them. It seems odd to me that they don't make more of those. But yeah, I do. I think the Victor Reader might be the answer to my problems. If I want a tactile note taker that does lots of other stuff as well, like podcasts and all the rest, then that might be the option. But I'm never going to convince Robin to do that. I know that.
I'm impressed by the sheer volume of feedback. You know, you have to really love a device and feel passionate about it to an extent that you will email in those numbers. So yeah, really, I mean, horses for courses, definitely.
Yeah, got you thinking there, hasn't it, Robin? Yeah, you're thinking maybe I should join the Victor Reader train.
If there was something about how I access books and other media that was frustrating me, it was like a pain point on the phone, then I would be thinking about it. But to be honest, I find it a really seamless, frictionless experience. So, you know, yeah, it's for different needs, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing, is, as we said at the very beginning, it's all about choice. But it's important that we have this conversation, because people who, like us, you know, who use the smartphone tech, that's great. But there's a lot of people out there who don't. And we need to be able to talk to all of them. So, it's great. But I'm glad we had this conversation this week. Before we go, just to say, next week, it is Site Village that's going to be taking up most of my time next week, because that's where I'm heading. I'm going to the Site Village in Birmingham. Very excited about that. I may come back with some audio presence for us, Robin. What I mean is interviews. I'm not talking about
that's
bringing you back actual presence. I'm not doing that. But I will come back, hopefully, with some audio presence so we can get a sample. For me, the thing that I'm looking forward to most is seeing what's called the Knute 360. Mm. Now, this is a multi-line Braille display. It's essentially a Kindle. They hate calling it this, but I can only describe it in this way. It's like a Kindle in Braille. It's quite a large device, obviously. I think it's 40 cells And there's 9 lines on it, I think. It's different sizes has been touted over the years, but that, I think, is the one they've settled on.
Yep.
And it just looks really good. And I think for a lot of people, especially, this is being really marketed at education, right? And I totally get that. But I think there's a lot of people out there who would just like to have a portable device where you can put notes on it and have them, you know, in a page format.
Yes, and it's portable like an APH desktop recorder is portable, for example. It's mains operated, and it's literally about the weight of a Perkins. It's pretty heavy. But you can certainly take it with you and have a full book reader experience wherever you go, as long as there's power.
I mean, it would be good if they could develop something over time that is a lot lighter, that is more portable. And they will. Yeah, exactly, they will. But we've got to start somewhere. This product is not out yet. It is still, it's coming. It is coming this year. They've finally announced that they will be selling it. The company being Bristol Braille Technology, they've created the Knute 360, and it's really, really interesting. I'm so glad that it's finally made its way out of prototype and into something marketable. So I'm going to be talking to the guys about that to find out about it. Even Amazon are going to be there. They're going to be showing off the dots as well and the capability of those, which I think is a really good thing. Because we talk about it a lot on the show, but I think people need hands-on examples of how they would use this. And by using it next to someone who, you know, works with it, who can explain how it operates and show you examples of the basics with it, simple things like telling the time or using it as an alarm or whatever, you know, that is really useful. I don't think people realise how much technology will be thrown away once you've got an Amazon Echo or a Google Home in your house. And that's the joy of these devices. But it's going to be a good one. Site Village, 9th and 10th of July. It's taking place in Birmingham. Search online for, if you want to search online for it, search QAC Site Village. It's the Queen Alexandra College that run the event every single year. Do you know, Robin, it's amazing because it was such a small event.
Originally, yeah.
Yeah, originally it was tiny, and now it's this massive event that, you know, all the big companies are going to. Humanware will be there, Optilec, Sight and Sound. So if you want to know what's happening in technology, head to Birmingham. If you can't make it to Birmingham, though, don't worry, because Sight Village takes place at other events around the country throughout the year. And again, search QAC Sight Village for more information on that. That is it for us for now. Keep your comments coming in, be it for the Victor Reader stream, for love of that product, or whatever else you want to get in touch with us to talk about. Techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Andy, thank you very much. Robin, to you too.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Bae.